to the Dirty Water News Fantasy Football Show with Nick Lesagor and Steve Pico.
Yesterday, Steve and I met up to meet our eventual anchor for the show, which is we'll release more information as that comes closer. But we met up with her and had a great night with her, had a couple of drinks, talked about the show and things that we see for the future of the show, and she's going to be amazing for the show. We can't wait to introduce her to the listeners. But during the course of the evening, we partook in a couple of adult beverages.
Only a couple.
Agreeable.
It was a Tuesday.
Yeah, it was a Tuesday. Right. It's funny you say that, Steve. It was a Tuesday, and I ordered a nice, you know, 4% beer, and she ordered a Coors Light beverage. Steve decided to go, was it vodka soda?
Yep.
On a Tuesday?
Yep.
And
it was a Tuesday that felt like a Thursday, though.
No.
I mean, if we're going to be honest, like.
But what was your real, what was your real excuse?
A real excuse? You can't have those empty carbs during the week.
No empty carbs, baby.
This is something you can't have. Everybody should be doing this, you know, for the fantasy season. You got to stock up. Take your carbs in on those Sundays.
You're going to be eating a lot of nachos. You're going to be eating a lot of hot dogs.
During the week, it's, right. You know, keep those carbs down. Keep the figure down. You're going to blossom up on Sunday. And if you want to be like, you know, Steve, have a couple of vodka sodas on Tuesday, jumpstart you to Thursday real quick.
Nice, nice vodka soda. So you got one, and then you got another one. A little questionable on why you were driving home, but you know what? Fair enough. You say you can handle them, and I trust you. And
I can't handle them. That's the thing. That's why I stopped it, too.
And it was noticeable because a waitress literally looked at you and said, okay, like, the party's here.
Yep.
You know, party's
started. This is the guy I've been waiting for to come
Tuesday
in
Tuesday night at this restaurant at 9:30. The party's here.
It just showed him a classy guy.
No, it was amazing, and I applaud that hard drinking. So we looked.
I'll have a Samuel Adams. I'll have one also.
While we were drinking beers and we were loading up on carbs, you look like an alcoholic. So that's good. Vodka on a Tuesday night. Don't knock the hustle. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Fantasy Football Show. I'm your host, Nick Lesagor. You can follow me on Twitter at NGennaroL alongside me, my co-host, Steve Pico. You can follow him on Twitter at Uncle Stav. He is a writer for Yummy Bro, www.yummybro.com. Awesome website. Go on there and see some of Steve's stuff. I am a fantasy football writer for Dirty Water News, hence the name of the show. It is episode 11, a very, very special episode, as you can see from the title of it, as you're listening right now on SoundCloud, hopefully iTunes eventually. Jamie Eisenberg of CBS Sports is going to be with us for an interview in a little bit. But first, Steve, let's hit the front page.
Summer of 99, right. Packed up everything and left it all behind. Uh-huh. Coming from overseas, yeah. Promises more to see. Yeah. Easy to build memories.
The front page is brought to you by the song you're listening to right now called It's Never Sunny in Cleveland by 16 off the record label Yesterday's Nothing. You can follow him on Twitter at 16_216 for more music.
Right. To the land where my gram had a set up for. Not 100 a second, it was a humbling lesson. Gotta deal with the real, never mind the expected. Now I hear my pants talking about.
The Boston Globe's Shalice Manzi-Young thinks it would be a, quote, surprise, end quote, if Gronk played at all during the preseason. Steve, Gronk has received a full bill of health, and it would seem he got in a light 11-on-11 work a couple days ago. There were reports. Ben Volen reported that Gronk was seen practicing on the side with Revis and Brady, yeah. And he ended that tweet with superstar overload, which I thought was great. Does this worry you at all, or what do you take away from Gronk if he doesn't play during the preseason?
Well, first of all, as two Patriots fans, let's get a real quick high five in there. All right.
Nailed it.
That's just good news.
No
all around.
Homerism on this show at all.
I gotta get it out of the way first. But no, this is no surprise to me, you know, no pun with the intro we just had on it. This guy got injured, you know, in the middle of the season, and the way ACLs are going, I was expecting him full go from the beginning of training camp. I'm all aboard on this guy. To me, he is the biggest, you know, impact player in fantasy sports when he is healthy and on that field. And it doesn't only help him, it helps everybody else in that Patriots offense. You know, a guy you're high on, Tom Brady, having the healthy Gronk out there just makes Brady, you know, that top quarterback that we all think he's high on.
Much like Josh Gordon and his ability to not stay out of trouble, much like Josh Gordon, Gronk, if he can stay healthy, can change your entire fantasy team from being, whether it's 500, playoff bound, he can change them into a championship team.
He's to me, he's better than Jimmy Graham. He's a better option than Jimmy Graham. The only reason why Jimmy Graham's going to go higher, because he hasn't been hurt like Gronk has. But to me, I have no problem going full board on Gronk in the second round. That's fine to me.
Yeah, you know what? Gronk is fascinating to me. In the second round, I just think that there's too much injury history there. Granted, there's going to be a player in every draft that is going to take the home run. For somebody to take Arian Foster in the second and then to make an argument to not take Gronk in the second, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Both of those guys have the potential to be home run hitters for your team if they can stay healthy, and health has been the main issue with the two of them. So I think that in terms of those two guys, in terms of Gronk, really, I feel comfortable taking him in the third round on. I think in the second round I'm looking for more of a proven guy in terms of health, staying healthy. But I can certainly understand it. It makes complete sense to me. If you want to make that splash and take Gronk, it would be almost like a, like I said, Josh Gordon situation. Sports Illustrated writer Robert Kiemko, hope I said that right, reports that Darren McFadden has the starting edge over MJD over in Oakland. Kiemko does also mention, though, that there will be a timeshare between the two backs. So, Steve, these two guys are going in the seventh and eighth rounds. It's a little fascinating to me that people are taking them even there, and I understand that they're two used-to-be or faux stud running backs. I mean, these guys used to be good, and I think it's a little bit of a misconception on what people may think that these two guys are going to do. What do you make of the backfield situation in Oakland right now? Of course, things can change once preseason games get going, but what do you make of it right now?
Right now, it's just, you know, an absolute cluster mess, I guess you could say. But I am I'm very sold on McFadden's talents. I think when he is healthy, he's proven that he is one of the top running backs you can get. But then he just gets injured a couple weeks after, and if you take the risk on drafting him high, you take the risk on, you know, missing a potential starter on your team, especially in the seventh or eighth round like they're going. Those are players that you're looking to be the first guy off your bench, hoping for, you know, maybe a better than what he's projected season. But again, if McFadden is there, I don't mind taking him in the eighth, but I really want to handcuff him with MJD. I like McFadden more than MJD right now.
The problem with those two guys and handcuffing them is, one, you don't know who's going to score, who's going to get the goal line work. I'm reading a lot of reports that say it's MJD. That's one problem. You don't know who's going to get the work from week to week. So you lose by 5 points. You started MJD, but McFadden outscored him by 10. It's like, it's going to be one of those situations if you find yourself in the driver's seat of getting those two guys. The only problem is they're going within 3 to 4 picks of each other. So the idea that you're going to get both of them, unless you reach for one of them, and that's even going to trigger something in another fantasy owner to grab the other one, I think. So the idea that you're going to get both of them, while it can happen, I think that the likelihood isn't good. Again, unless you reach for one of them. Browns wide receiver Josh Gordon will claim secondhand smoke was the cause of his second positive drug test reading. Now, in my opinion, after reading some of the facts, it seems a little more likely that maybe that was the case, and I may get killed for that on Twitter. But basically, the way it's broken down, to make a long story short, there are two tests they give you when they give you the piss test, and it's an A test and a B test. And literally, the difference between an A test and a B test is where the examiner puts the label of A and B. So basically, one test read, the first test read 16% for the level. And I mean, forgive my ignorance, I'm not a scientist, so I don't really understand this stuff, but the league minimum is 15. He went 16, and then the second test read a 13. If the first test had been labeled A instead of B, at the 13, he would have been scot-free. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's, in terms of Josh Gordon, I'm thinking he's still not going to get a full year suspension. Maybe 8 to 10. I read recent reports that they're looking at 6. If it's 6 games, I love him in the mid-rounds.
I mean, he has clear round one talent. You know,
for sure.
I had ranked before the draft came out, he was number 2 right there with Calvin for me personally. it's just a little, you really don't know what to do. You don't know what Goodell's going to do. You know, you see what happened with Ray Rice, getting a 2-game for something that's pretty serious. For a second-time offender like this, I think he's going to be a little more harsher on Gordon. 6 is a questionable one, you know, especially in dynasty leagues. If you have Gordon, 6, you were thinking about keeping him. 8, you know, you might want to pass on that. But if 6 games, definitely he's in play. And if you can get him in those later rounds, jump on him.
And our last quick hit on running back, Steve. Fred Jackson signs a 1-year, $2.6 million extension with the Buffalo Bills. We're going to ask Jamie about this in a little bit, but what does it do for C.J. Spiller's value that Fred Jackson re-upped, and what do you think it does for Fred Jackson's value, most importantly, in this situation?
I think Fred Jackson's going to stay the same. He's going to, you know, kind of take that role, fill in for Spiller down the field, but then take over on the goal line like he did last year. And with Spiller's, you know, injury history, I'm a little more favorable of Fred Jackson this year, I guess you can say, because you can get him at a later round and you're not taking, you know, third round or fourth round pick on Spiller. So to me, Fred Jackson in the 8th or 9th, I like him there a lot.
All right, Steve, let's get into the good stuff. On August 23rd, the CBS Scene Restaurant at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough is hosting the 2014 Draft Day special event for fantasy footballers of every skill and commitment level. They'll have free giveaways and raffles, live drafts, and expert advice from fantasy analysts Jamie Eisenberg, Dave Richard, and Adam Azer. We're lucky enough to have Jamie on the phone with us. Jamie, how's it going, man?
It's going well. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for coming on, Jamie.
Yeah, absolutely. Jamie, before we get started here, give everybody the website for the event that they can access to get more information about the event over at Gillette that you guys are doing.
Yeah, it's, as you said, August 23rd at Foxborough. It'll be an all-day event with a lot of different giveaways and stuff like that. It's, you can find all the information at cbssports.com/fantasyparty. You can also just find it on our website at fantasynews.cbssports.com. So very hard to miss it. It's a very goofy picture of myself and Dave Richard holding our draft kit, standing, I think, in front of a picture of the CBS Scene. But all the information will be there, and it should be a great time.
That looks like a young Jamie Eisenberg in that picture. Is that true, or is that a more recent photo?
That is a recent photo. I can't say that's the best depiction of me, but certainly it is one that is done within the calendar year. So that is what I look like.
You know, it's fascinating to me. On Instagram, I posted a picture of you, and everybody, there were more than one person that compared you to Bradley Cooper.
Wow.
So how does that happen for you?
it happens, I guess, that people have some eyesight problems, or I feel bad for Bradley Cooper that he's being compared to me. But, you know, every now and then, you know, people see something that they think is a resemblance, so I appreciate that very much.
So, Jamie, before we get started here, a debate needs to be settled between Steve and I, okay? We did a mock draft. We did a 12-team mock draft about a month ago. It was a 12-team standard league mock. He picked 4th, and I picked 10th. He picked 4th overall, and just real quick, his team, he ended up with RG3. His running backs were Matt Forte and Alf, Keenan Allen and Macklin for his 2 wide receivers. Gronk was his tight end, and then his flex was either, you know, Freddie J or Kendall Wright. He had the Rams defense, and then, you know, Steven Hauschka for his kicker. Steven Ridley was on his bench, Mike Evans, Roy Helu, Kadeem Carey, Harry Douglas, and Dexter McCluster on his bench as well. I picked 10th, Jamie, and this is going to be a follow-up question, but I want you to answer this real quick and, you know, and be honest, because I already know what the answer is. I picked 10th, and I wound up with Matty Ice, Andre Ellington and Bishop Sankey, Demaryius Thomas and A.J. Green, Jordan Reed for my tight end. My flex was Rashad Jennings, the Pats D, naturally, and Alex Henry. You know, my bench spots included Ray Rice, Lamar Miller, Bernard Pierce, Reuben Randall, Marcus Wheaton, Terrence West, and Johnny Football. So who won that draft?
It's a standard or PPR league?
Standard.
It's close. I think your team, just, you know, not seeing it in front of me, obviously trying to remember it. I like his running back depth a little bit better than yours. Ooh. I like your receivers a lot better by far. The fact that you have both Ravens running backs, Andre Ellington, the potential of Lamar Miller, I think your team has a little bit of an edge. The quarterback is in your favor. Tight end is in his favor, but I'm a Jordan Reed guy. So it would be close. But I think I gave your team a little bit more of an edge because those two wide receivers are hard to.
Jamie, before we go any further, this was, you know, this was a month ago, and now he's just, I drafted Ray Rice, so he's thinking all big over here. So you just put his his ego a little bit bigger right there. I was hoping you'd come on my side.
That's right. I mean, Jamie,
well,
listen.
You know, I will say this. Matt Forte is a difference maker, and the running back position is hard to find talent like a Forte. So receivers will emerge. The draft is only half about. You got to play the waiver wire, and that's a big key to winning the fantasy league. So this is just the beginning. Don't let anything that comes out of my mouth right now, or certainly out of anybody else's mouth, make you feel bad.
You know, and it's nice that you're letting him down easy, Jamie. I'm gonna say this: when you're a winner like me and you, you know, it's tough to go higher when you're at the number one spot. You know what I'm saying? So, you know what? I appreciate you, reaffirming my dominance in that draft. We got a lot of great chatter on that on Instagram and Twitter. So it was great that you've been the deciding factor. So I should win a free dinner.
I should give
or
you a crown, Nick. You officially won this
That's
one.
Right.
We got the final word from Jamie.
So. Now, leading into that that question I had for you, I just want to know, you know, in terms of, you know, for 2 years now, I've been a big supporter of going wide receiver in the first two rounds. And to me, it's only if you're picking ninth overall or later. You seem to believe it has its benefits on your podcast that I listen to, but you aren't huge on the game plan overall. Why is that?
I'm sorry, on the game plan?
Yeah, you know, on the whole idea of going wide receiver with your first two picks.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes. Well, I think it depends, first off, what format you're talking about. You know, if you're in a standard league, you know, you're going to be, you know, caught a little short, you know, just at the running back position. And you know, we're talking mostly on a 12-team league as opposed to a 10-team league, because you can gamble a little bit more in a 10-team league and still make up for it with, you know, the deeper talent pool. But I think, you know, just, again, it's hard for me to go the whole roster just based on what you rattled off. But the names that jump out at you are those two wide receivers. And, you know, the thing about it is obviously there's less injury risk. You know, clearly last year there was a situation, Julio Jones got hurt. The year before, Jordy Nelson, you know, was coming off the number two, being the number two wide receiver, he got hurt. Calvin Johnson played through an injury. So those guys do get hurt, but they don't get nicked up like running backs do and don't have to miss the amount of time that those guys do. You know, like I said before, receivers will emerge. But running backs, you know, you could always take the second guy as your draft goes on, as opposed to the second guy, meaning like the backup guy, comparatively to, you know, taking a team's third or fourth wide receiver, which those guys may or may not pan out. But, you know, at some point, probably a Bernard Pierce, a Lamar Miller, a Devontae Freeman, Terrence West, some of these backup running backs are going to be starters for a 3-4 week stretch, and your team can kind of make up for the lack of running back talent that you didn't get early in the first couple rounds. So it's really a personal choice. You know, if you feel comfortable not having one of those upper echelon type running backs, you know, and the group is about 12 to 15 deep. If you don't have one of those guys and you still feel okay with it because your receivers are that dominant, then you should be okay with how your draft looks.
All right, Jamie, I'm going to roll kind of with the running back theme here. So, like, you know, it's very heavy in the first and second rounds at running back. What about, you know, guys in the third, fourth, or even further down in drafts in the running back position that some people should be taking looks at?
Well, you mentioned a couple in the drafts that you guys just talked about. You know, Andre Ellington is somebody that I'm very excited about. I like the offense there in Arizona. I got a chance to spend some time with Andre. He trains down here in we're based in South Florida, and he trains in West Palm Beach with a guy by the name of Tony Villani, who's you know, a very noted NFL trainer, mostly for combine stuff. But he does such a good job. The guys come back and work out with him, you know, getting ready for the season. And Andre's one of those guys. It was interesting because when I got a chance to speak with him, it was just after the Mendenhall announcement of retiring, and before, or they may have just signed John Dwyer, but he was really focusing on his you know, receiving. They have a jug machine there, and I'm sure you guys are familiar with it, but a jug machine is the thing you see that spits out the footballs. You know, guys work on their receiving.
Yep.
So he actually went through a session of the jug machine. And then Tony, the trainer, said, you know, you're not done. Go back and do some more because it's going to be a big part of your game. And so he went back and did another session because catching the ball in that offense is going to be a big part of his fantasy value. So Ellington's a guy. Stephen Ridley, I think, has bounce back ability. He's got a, you know, you guys are certainly well aware he can't fumble.
We're well aware.
You know, if that happens, he could be in line. You know, he was a top 12 running back the year before in 2012. Same with his running mate there, and Shane Vereen, another guy that's going to be in that 3-4 range. If you fewer projection range numbers from what he played last year over 16 games. He's a top 15 running back in standard leagues. Obviously, his value goes up immensely in PPR leagues because of how much he catches the ball. And you guys are, again, well aware. Kevin Falk had some good fantasy value. Danny Woodhead had a couple of good, very relevant fantasy seasons as that third down back there. And I think Vereen can be, you know, above the Kevin Falk level, but a little bit more statistically, you know, enhanced, like we saw from Woodhead because of his touchdown scoring. So, you know, those are two guys I think you can look at in that range. Bishop Sankey, Toby Gerhart. There's a lot of guys that if you miss on the big name guys, and I think the cutoff, if you look at like my rank list or my colleague Dave Richard's rank list, it gets to be right around the Zach Stacy, Doug Martin, Marshawn Lynch range. And I know it's a little strange to hear Marshawn Lynch in that category, but the holdout and his workload from a year ago pushes him down a little bit. But if you look at that 13-14 range, that's kind of the cutoff of the really the number one type guys. And then you get into the Ellington, the Reggie Bushes, Shane Vereen, CJ Spiller, you know, guys that could be very good, if not great, but there's just a little bit of a red flag with each of them.
You know, it's fascinating to me, Marshawn Lynch's holdout, and really I can see him being such a stubborn player to hold out that long and really, like, take it the whole 6 weeks. And I'm not sure money is much of a motivator for him right now. But you mentioned Shane Vereen, Jamie, and, you know, I brought up the idea, in terms of the Patriots, I brought up the idea that with as good as a defense as New England has, or as good as they're supposed to be, I guess I should say, in theory, they're going to get the defense is going to get off the field sooner to give Brady and the offense more opportunities to score. That was sort of my, you know, theory, my wavelength of thinking. Why are you so low on Brady this year, and what to you is his ceiling?
Well, you know, I don't know if I would necessarily say that I'm low on Brady. I understand where he's ranked, and it probably looks a little odd. But you kind of look at the way that the season unfolded for them last year, and clearly it's totally dependent on with Rob Gronkowski, without Rob Gronkowski, because that's a different passing attack altogether. But you have to sort of, you know, and I'm going to probably talk out of both sides of my mouth in this regard, but you have to sort of play it safe. And it, you know, can you count on Rob Gronkowski for 16 games? Because we haven't seen it now for 2 years, and the injuries are really starting to pile up. You know, the knee, the back, the forearm, you know, it seems as if, you know, 16 games is a wish list at this point. But I do think that you go back to, not that they've been down or have bad years, but the Super Bowl years for New England, they were run dominant and not throwing the ball all over the place, and they haven't had that Super Bowl caliber season. That's not the right way to say it. They haven't had the Super Bowl winning season because they've had Super Bowl caliber season. And I wonder if, you know, just how Bill Belichick approaches things, do they want to save Brady for the end of the year and not necessarily risk any sort of injury? Because he is getting up in age, and you have to wonder what the strength of the team is. And I think if Gronk is not 100% and they're being conservative, and, you know, it's one thing to have the year like they had in 2007 when they were able to just throw all over the place and, you know, bludgeon people that way. But it's also another thing, and a big psychological edge, to beat people up with your run game and to push you around and make you feel like you're less of a man. And they really they did that to teams last year. You know, LeGarrette Blount was a force. The run game was a force. Ridley was even running well, you know, when he got an opportunity. And it takes your defense off the field. It saves them, keeps them fresh. I wonder if, you know, and he's the toughest coach to figure out, and it's unfortunate because he's been around the longest. He's the toughest coach for fantasy analysts, for fantasy owners to figure out, because you never know what's going to happen. So I'm just, you know, looking at Brady, and I wrote his player outlook, so you can see it on his preseason outlook. You can make a very strong case that he is the fourth best quarterback, and I would have no problem if somebody said he's the fourth best guy. Right. He's the third best guy, second best guy. You know, if you want to make a case, he's better than Peyton Manning. It wouldn't surprise me if that happened. I just look at the other guys that I have ranked ahead of them, and there are a couple of surprise names in that group, Tony Romo being one, Colin Kaepernick being another. I just think that their ceiling is a little bit higher as we enter the year to where it, you know, Brady typically is. So I would be very happy to take Tom Brady. You know, his name value pushes his price tag up a little bit too high. But I think if you draft him and everybody's going to draft him to be a starter, you're going to be very happy.
You know, speaking of quarterbacks, and, you know, the quarterback situation in Minnesota is definitely up in the air, and you're hearing reports on Matt Cassel being the guy and then Teddy Bridgewater. Listening to your show as much as I do, it's interesting to me your love for Cordero Patterson, and you even said on one of your shows, Jamie, that you like him more than DeSean Jackson, and your rankings would reflect that. What is it about Cordero Patterson that you love, especially more than such a game breaker guy like DeSean?
Well, I think that, you know, the phrase you just used there can easily define Patterson. You just haven't seen it over the longevity because of Jackson's career, but. Patterson, what he showed in to close the season as a return guy, as a running back, as a receiver, when he had the ball in his hands, he was dominant. One of the most interesting stats that I found was that he was in the top five of pass interference calls drawn for the season, and you factor in that he didn't really play very much in the beginning part of the year. That just shows that he commanded so much respect, and teams were so fearful of him that they were doing things to cause him to get in the ball in his hands. I think you're going to see a creative offense with North Turner, and that's one of the biggest drawing points for me, is you saw what North Turner was able to do with Josh Gordon, just an athletically gifted wide receiver, dominant, can get the ball in space, can, run away from a defender. Patterson is a similar guy, and I think the comparison is fair because the quarterback situation in Cleveland, as we know, last year was horrible. Well, the quarterback situation in Minnesota could be very good if Bridgewater pans out or Castle turns out to be, maybe, I'll say this, I don't know if this is a compliment or not, but as good as Brian Hoyer was, but something that's serviceable for his receivers, because we don't really care about, from a fantasy perspective, what happens with Matt Castle and his numbers. We care what the receivers do. But clearly there's a hand-in-hand, component to that. I just look at Patterson's, ability and what he showed as a very raw rookie, and only going to get better in his sophomore year. There's a lot of room for disappointment. I totally understand that. But and that's really the one drawback is, we talked about Josh Gordon being a great fantasy option last year. Well, he was in the round 6-9 range. Patterson's in the round 4-6 range. So, you're taking a chance on a guy that could easily, disappoint you. But if he plays to his level, and you think about it, the offenses that the Vikings are facing, the Bears' offense is now, on a different level. Packers offense is amazing. The Lions offense should be amazing. So they're going to have to put up a lot of points, and they're probably going to be trailing in a lot of games because their defense is still, up and coming. I think they're going to be throwing a lot. North Turner is a very creative play caller, and they know that if they want to score points, putting the ball in Patterson's hand is of an utmost importance.
Yeah, Jamie, I'm with you with Patterson. Very boom or bust, especially in the range he's going, like you said, 4-6. And also, like you mentioned, the Josh Gordon being 6-9 last year, as the sophomore receiver, kind of like Patterson's going into, are there any other wide receivers that you think might take that Alshon Jeffrey, Josh Gordon type leap as their sophomore season starts this year?
Well, Terrence Williams is the first one that comes to mind. I think you look at that offense in Dallas and what he showed last year, in a very limited capacity when Miles Austin first got hurt. I'm in love with the Dallas offense because I think their defense is going to be so bad. And we saw during his tenure in Detroit as the offensive coordinator, Scott Linehan, Matt Stafford in the last 3 years was top five in pass attempts each of those 3 years. So you're going to see Tony Romo probably throwing a ton. And Dez Bryant's going to be great. Jason Witten's going to be great. But there's going to be another guy that has to step up there. And Terrence Williams, just screams breakout player to me. So I love him where he's going right now. His average draft position is actually something we talked about on our podcast today, that both Dave and I agree, very, very, very low. He's in the 90s, and I think he's got top 60 overall potential. He could be a top five pick. I don't think you have to draft him that way, but the chance is there for him. The names from the draft class last year that people are going to point to, Tavon Austin and DeAndre Hopkins, there's potential for both those guys. Austin's numbers were much better when Sam Bradford was the quarterback early in the season, and then things just really fell apart when Bradford wasn't there. And then Hopkins, it just never materialized. But if Andre Johnson, is not 100%, as we see right now with the hamstring, or if he has a DeSean Jackson-type season like we saw when he wasn't happy about his contract and his situation, which I don't expect from Johnson, but you never know, Hopkins could step up. I'm just not really I wouldn't advise drafting those guys, as anything more than probably number four receivers, just because there's still a long way to go for those two guys. And then Kenny Stills is another one, that was just as a potential starter for New Orleans. He could have a very big season if he can translate from playing indoors to going outdoors, but that's really the whole Saints team.
Yeah, Steve and I had a talk on a recent show about Kenny Stills and the wide receiver situation. I call me crazy, I actually like Kenny Stills more than, you know, any other wide receiver, obviously, other than Jimmy on that team. I think Colston is getting older, and I think a lot of defenses are catching on to his way, you know, his route running, his way of running, and I just really, I'm a huge fan of Kenny Stills this year. But in terms of, we referenced the mock draft that Steve and I did earlier. In a recent mock that you did with Adam and Dave, you took LeGarrette Blount over Darren McFadden in the 10th round. And, you know, it's really easy for us as fantasy footballers to draft in the early rounds, you know, obviously. So in these later rounds, I just was curious why you took a guy like Blount, who's really projected to get 6 to 10 a game, you know, carries a game, over a guy like Darren McFadden. Was it the injury history, or was it something more?
Well, I don't view McFadden. I know there was a report either yesterday or today about, you know, that he's actually going to be, you know, the quote-unquote starter. Probably in hindsight, McFadden makes more sense. And the draft you're referencing, it was one of those, you know, kind of scenarios where the way the draft unfolded, I believe I had McCoy first, picking second overall, and then I ended up with Julio Jones and A.J. Green. A.J. Green fell to round 3.
Right.
So I was chasing running back a little bit, and then I took a chance on Patterson. I believe it was round 5. So my core group of starters, and I know I referenced this on our podcast, that I think it was Andrew Luck, LeSean McCoy, Joique Bell, those two receivers, and I'm a big Dennis Pitta guy. I'm pretty sure I got Pitta or a tight end of his caliber. I don't remember who ended up with. Maybe it was Jordan Reed. So my starters were very good, and obviously, like we talked about, when you get receivers that are that talented early, you don't necessarily have to get a lot of backups because you're never going to bench those guys. So at that point, especially at the point of the draft, I started taking just a lot of what I referenced before, the backup running backs, and who would have the best chance, I think, to sort of ascend to fantasy starter if, in fact, the guy in front of them got hurt. I don't know how much I'd be excited about starting Darren McFadden right now if he's a starter, you know, and even if Maurice Jones-Drew is out of the picture. He could definitely be the guy that we've, you know, pegged into over the last several seasons. But, you know, when at the point in the season when I would potentially need to start somebody, bye weeks, or, you know, if an injury to McCoy or Joique Bell was my second starter, LeGarrette Blount has a lot more upside if he would end up being the starter in Pittsburgh, comparatively to Darren McFadden sharing the role with Jones-Drew. I'm curious to see if they would ever give an opportunity to Latavius Murray, if in fact they didn't want to change McFadden's role. We know that they like at times using Marcel Reese in a capacity to carry the ball. So, you know, maybe at this point, looking back, you know, we did that draft, I think, 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. I might take McFadden now just because of the news. But at the time, I just felt that LeGarrette Blount, if in fact he were to get an opportunity more than the 6 to 8 carries, as we saw last year in New England, he would have an opportunity to be a very good fantasy starter.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, the depth, having the multiple wide receivers. You don't really need the assistance at the running back position. One team that's kind of like that this year is the Washington Redskins, you know, bringing in DeSean Jackson. My question's more towards the quarterback, though. Given a full season to recover from his ACL, I'm just wondering if you think RG3 is going to return to his rookie season form, or if not even better than what we saw his rookie season.
Well, I think he's going to definitely return to form. To get back to that rookie year number is going to be a little difficult because it was so dependent on his rushing touchdowns. And, you know, he went from, I think it was like seven rushing touchdowns to none. And that obviously crushed him, you know, last year. So the opportunity for him to be a successful passer is off the charts because you look at, he's a great, you know, long ball thrower. He can get the ball down the field very well. And DeSean Jackson only going to help in that regard. The way that Pierre Garçon plays and Jordan Reed plays, those guys should, you know, really help RG3's numbers, you know, put up, you know, very good statistical season from a passing standpoint. And then the addition of Jay Gruden as the coach, you just look at what Andy Dalton has been able to do, you know, 2 years of top 12 fantasy production, and I think we could all agree that RG3's ceiling is much higher than Andy Dalton, who was a top 5 quarterback last year. So I think the thing to do with RG3 is, you know, don't reach for him. Let him fall to you in the right spot. You know, the draft you guys referenced, I would take Matt Ryan over RG3. I think Matt Ryan's going to have a better year. But if you get RG3, you know, a round or two later than Matt Ryan, and then you do the right thing and handcuff him with another number 2 quarterback, you know, that has upside, Carson Palmer, Ben Roethlisberger, you know, depending on whether Jay Cutler, Cam Newton, rotation, you're okay. But I do think he is going to bounce back. I do think he's going to be a top 10 quarterback, and I think his values would be very good on draft day.
You know, and this kind of rolls right into the next question I had for you when it comes to Matt Ryan. Both of these guys kind of seem to be going a little bit lower than I would think. I mean, Matt Ryan, their team didn't do well last year, but he actually had a pretty decent year, just over 4,500 yards. Why is he being drafted so low, you know, behind RG3? It doesn't sit right with me for some reason.
Oh, me too. You know, I referenced today on our show that I'm probably going to adjust my quarterback rankings to move Matt Ryan and Andrew Luck ahead of Colin Kaepernick the way I have it right now. Because I think if you look, you have to judge Matt Ryan based on where he was with Julio Jones. And I know, you know, you look at it, you say, okay, can Julio Jones stay healthy? Can Roddy White stay healthy? And they lose Tony Gonzalez. So those are, you know, three big ifs. But, you know, the Falcons feel pretty confident that Julio Jones, they corrected the problem with the broken bone in his foot and the screw that got loose. Roddy White, they just signed him to extension, so you got to feel that they're pretty confident he's going to bounce back. I think they're going to make up for the loss of Tony Gonzalez with two guys on top of those receivers, one being Harry Douglas, who, you know, they've never really been a three-wide receiver set team, and they have the ability now because Harry Douglas really had to step up and play at a high level. So, you know, he's going to be the third guy. And then I'm a big Devontae Freeman guy. I think the addition of him, not that Jacquizz Rodgers was bad or even Steven Jackson, but I think he can beat Jacquizz Rodgers times 10. You know, just a scat back that can do a lot more and open up the offense a little bit more. And their defense is still going to be, you know, on the upswing. But, you know, I say that with more of an optimistic view than anything else because they're going to struggle a little bit. So he's going to be throwing a lot. It's a very competitive division. You know, Carolina coming off the division lead last year and certainly New Orleans. So there's a lot of room for Matt Ryan to get back to where he was. And again, you know, you can always extrapolate numbers however you want. But you look at Ryan's numbers when Julio Jones was healthy. And he was amazing. And, you know, you take away anybody's number one receiver, and they're going to struggle. So I think Ryan's in line for a huge bounce back season. So I think he's got a top five season in front of him this year.
Another guy that a lot of fantasy analysts such as yourself, I'm not sure if you take this specific approach, Jamie, but a lot of people that, you know, a lot of analysts that think C.J. Spiller is going to have a bounce back year. Recently, Jason LaCanfora reported that Spiller could possibly be traded. And now with rumors of Ben-Jarvis Green-Ellis being moved, possibly released, do you see either guy in a new uniform this season?
Between Green-Ellis and Spiller?
And Spiller, yeah.
Spiller, I don't expect him to be in a different uniform, but, you know, the more telling news was, you know, the fact that the Bills signed Fred Jackson to a one-year extension because, you know, they're kind of positioning themselves for the post-Spiller era of keeping Jackson on, you know, as sort of the backup guy, and then the move that they did at the draft to trade for Bryce Brown because, you know, that's a very similar skill set and certainly the same type of dynamic running back. So, I wouldn't reach for C.J. Spiller. You know, clearly he's a guy that disappointed a lot of people last year, and, you know, if you were one of the people who drafted him early or picked him up, you know, in an auction early, you're going to obviously have a little bit of hesitation when he's sitting there in the third round. You know, maybe in the fourth round you're a little bit more apt to take a chance on him, but, you know, it just depends on where you are in the draft, and that's another one of those guys, you know, to go back to one of your previous questions about that third, fourth round range. Spiller, you're going to have to make a decision on him, and if you feel comfortable taking a chance, you'll do it. If you're, you know, don't want to deal with the headache, you'll pass. The one thing I'll say is Buffalo's a very run-dominant team. Spiller is still going to be the starter. It's just a matter of how much work he'll lose to both Jackson and Bryce Brown. In terms of Green-Ellis, yeah, he's definitely going to be in, I just say definitely. There's a very strong likelihood he's in a different uniform because, you know, they drafted Jeremy Hill. Jeremy Hill's already, you know, running ahead of him. I don't know why that they would want to keep, you know, Green-Ellis because he doesn't play special teams. He doesn't, you know, catch the ball. So he's really just going to be a guy sitting on the bench waiting for, you know, either Bernard or Hill to, you know, get hurt. And, you know, I don't know if the Bengals want to go that route. So he's on the roster bubble right now, from what I understand. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's cut, you know, and maybe ends up. I wouldn't be surprised, actually, you know, if the Patriots maybe kick the tires on him again. Just the, you know, the Brandon Bolden rumor about him not making the final roster. I wouldn't be surprised if Belichick, knowing how Green-Ellis didn't fumble, you know, did what he was supposed to do, you know, if they maybe, you know, brought him in at some point during the year.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you that exact question. I think, you know, with Ben-Jarvis Green-Ellis, when it comes to him, I don't know, would you see him more in a LeGarrette Blount 2013 role for New England, or would you see him more as maybe a featured back, maybe not really featured, but, you know, a back ahead of, you know, Ridley?
The only way I would see Greenhouse ahead of Ridley is the fumble situation. You know, the thing that Steve Ridley has to do, and, you know, you guys certainly are probably more aware of this than I am, but he just got to hold on to the ball the preseason, because if he doesn't do anything to cost himself going into week one, I really do think that the Patriots will give him every opportunity to be the starter again, the featured guy, and lead that backfield. It's just a matter of, you know, can he do it? It's a big year for him. It's a contract year. You know, he's coming off of a disappointing performance, clearly. You know, he every time I've either heard him talk, or the couple of times I've talked to him myself, seems like a very prideful guy, you know, wants to be successful in this league. And I think, at least I would hope that running backs all across the league realize that it's such a small window that, you know, you don't want to, you know, lose any chance to prove yourself. So I don't think at this point in his career, Greenhouse is going to be a featured back ever again. It would take a LeGarrette Blount type situation of, you know, Ridley fumbling, or, you know, let's just say he's from the Bengals. It would take a situation of, you know, Giovanni Bernard getting hurt at this point, or Jeremy Hill getting hurt, for Greenhouse to get back into his role. And no matter what team he would end up playing for, it'd probably be a similar situation.
Absolutely. Jamie, we just got a couple questions for you to end out the interview. A lot of people are curious about their teams and what you think in terms of keepers, and some really interesting questions here. At Novak42 on Twitter wants to know how a third-year wide receiver affects your draft rankings and if PPR is any different.
You know, I'm still, you know, probably a dinosaur in this regard, but I still like the third-year receiver theory. And this year's class is interesting because, you know, could have been amazing. You know, if you're talking about Josh Gordon or Justin Blackman, probably the two, at least two of the biggest names of this class, and they're not going to be on the field, at least the speculation for, you know, Gordon, for the majority of the season. So you still have Alshon Jeffrey, you got T.Y. Hilton, big Michael Floyd fan. There's some talent there, and I think some of the guys you can get late that have the chance to really blossom. Rod Streeter would be one. You know, I view him as the number one receiver for the Raiders. And Jared Boykin, and both those guys are undrafted, you know, rookie free agents that were signed by their respective teams. And you know, Boykin got a chance last year with the injury to Randall Cobb to show himself, and he's going to step into that James Jones role. So it doesn't really change in a PPR league in terms of looking at the third-year receivers, but just evaluating receivers as a whole, obviously PPR changes things. It pushes those receivers up in a much different light.
And at Bada Bing U, great Twitter name. He has an interesting PPR, actually, keeper situation. He wants to know if you keep Dez for a second rounder, Aaron Rodgers for a third, Julius Thomas for a fourth, or Andre Ellington for a fifth.
You only keep one?
Yeah.
One keeper, yes.
Yeah, I know it's not the biggest name, but I would probably keep Andre Ellington. PPR leagues tend to push quarterbacks down, so, you know, even though Aaron Rodgers in the third round probably sounds great, that's about where he could go, you know, and especially if it's 4 points for passing touchdowns versus six. You know, I don't know what his scoring may be, but to me, I view Andre Ellington as a second-round pick in the PPR league, because I would not be surprised if he's got 60 catches in the season. He could be 1,500 total yards, and I know I'm probably a little bit bullish in those numbers, but, you know, off the record and on the record, the Cardinals members of the Cardinals management made reference to Andre Ellington in the Jamal Charles type comparison. Now, you know, again, they're not going to say anything bad about him, but it was more the off-the-record comment that was interesting to me than the on-the-record one. So Bruce Arians said last year Carson Palmer, after, you know, spending some time with Andre Ellington, wanted to use him as a receiver. And Arians was like, no, he's a running back. We're not going to switch his position. He's not going to be your slot guy. Calm down. But that offense, you know, I just look at it, you know, they're getting – you know, Cooper back from the injury a year ago. You know, they signed the offensive lineman from the Raiders, whose name escapes me right now, so I apologize, but new left tackle. And, you know, you're looking at Larry Fitzgerald, Michael Floyd. You know, they like Ted Ginn. They like this rookie that they drafted, John Brown. Ellington, to me, is going to have an opportunity to have a big year. Now, he's got to stay healthy. You know, a lot of people are concerned about his size, but small running backs have done pretty well at times in the NFL, and I just think, you know, if he was in the NFC East, and you knew Andre Ellington, you got a chance to see him a little bit more, or, you know, for you guys for the AFC East, not that you don't know who he is, but, you know, the casual fan, I think if you got a chance to watch him play last year, you would say, wow, I wish they would give him the ball a little bit more. We'd like to see what this guy can do. Well, that's the chance that's going to happen right now. And I think the potential is off the chart. It could be a situation where he lets you down. I'm totally aware of that because there's an unknown commodity with him. But if he plays to his level, you're going to be looking at top 10 guy in all formats based on his potential.
Especially in the wide receiver format I gave you earlier, I love Andre Ellington as my number one running back. I've been huge on Ellington since we started the show a couple months ago. I loved what he did last year and the limited time he had, and I just think this guy's going to be an absolute stud in Bruce Arians' offense. I'm really high on him. Our last question is from Stefan DiGregorio. He's in a 12-team standard league, Jamie. He needs to either pick a keeper or decline and receive an additional pick between rounds 3 and 6, and that depends on his league's lottery. So he's got five players: Doug Martin for a first rounder, Reggie Bush for a second, Andre Johnson for a third, Antonio Brown for a fourth, and Matt Stafford for a fifth. He can pick one of those, Jamie, or he can decline his keeper option and take a chance on the lottery. What do you think he should do?
The one guy who stood out to me based on the value is Antonio Brown in the fourth round. Standard league, he's going anywhere from end of round two to beginning to middle of round three. And I think you're picking up, round worth of value there. I definitely wouldn't take Doug Martin in round one at this point or Reggie Bush in round two. I don't think Andre Johnson is a round three guy. I think he's more of a, closer to round four. And then I just don't know if Stafford is worth it. But Antonio Brown, is very overlooked because he doesn't scream this number one type receiver like Julio Jones or Dez Bryant or Demaryius Thomas, but numbers last year were comparable. He had a very big season, and now that there's Emmanuel Sanders gone, Jericho Cotchery gone, that's a lot of production to replace. And I say Cotchery because he scored 10 touchdowns last year. So there's a chance for Antonio Brown to have to do a little more, and maybe he does respond. I think for the round four price tag, I would probably keep him and pencil him in as my number one guy with a chance to maybe get somebody even better. And then you have a really strong receiving core that way.
Doesn't sound to me like you're much of a gambler wanting to take the lottery pick. I told Stefan the same thing. I liked Antonio Brown as well.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, if he's, he's your fourth round guy. So it gives you the opportunity to go the potential of any different direction because, you got to factor in a keyword as well. But if you can come away with, let's just say you end up with Demaryius Thomas in the first round, and then, your second round running back could be Doug Martin. He could fall to the round two range, and maybe Reggie Bush in the round three range. And now you've ended up with three guys who you were considering keeping, on top of the fact that you got Demaryius Thomas to go with that. Now you could say that the extra pick, you end up with three or four of those same players, but I don't think you'd have the same value or the opportunity to get those same guys when you factor in the keepers. I just think Antonio Brown in round four is something that I would be excited about, and I'd make him the piece that I'd build my team around. Not that he's going to be your best player. I hope he wouldn't be your best player, but he'd certainly be your second or third best player, right, and you have a very good fantasy team.
Absolutely. On August 23rd, CBS Scene Restaurant, Jamie Eisenberg, Dave Richard, Adam Azer. They're going to be CBS Scene again, right, at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. It's called the 2014 Draft Day Special Event. Free giveaways, raffles, live drafts, and they're going to be giving out expert advice that you just heard here on the show. Again, Jamie Eisenberg, thank you so much for joining the show. Steve and I will tweet out the link to the event where you can get more information.
Well, I appreciate that, and I hope to see you guys there so I can meet you guys in person, and you can show me some more of your fantasy drafts, and we can pick who had the winner at that point as well.
Yeah, I'm it's a battle, Jamie. I'd love to show up, and I think I might. There's an open bar wedding that I'm supposed to be attending with the girlfriend. You can't say no to free liquored Arnie Palmies. Just can't do it.
Well, I will say this. That's very true. Very difficult to say no to that. But you might be selected to play in a league with myself and Dave and Adam. And then imagine in January, if you won, and those bragging rights that you could have. So while the free open bar may lead to a very fun night, think about 6 months of fantasy fun that leads to endless years of possibility of saying that you beat Dave Richard, the fantasy expert. I say Dave because you're not going to beat me, but I don't know. But, think about that opportunity. So we will be giving away the opportunity to play in a league with us. I know a lot of people rightfully so, think that they're better than us at what we do, and now you get the chance to prove it. So, you know, maybe you're one of those people, and then you get a chance to be in the league with us as well.
Well, listen, Jamie, Nick's going to not win that league anyway, so for him to go, it's not even worth it. You know what? I'll take the time out. I got that night free. I'll come by. I'll enter it. Maybe we can have a little competition between you and I, and make it interesting.
Oh, please do. I look forward to it. You know, I like to hopefully it'd be both you guys, but you know, Steve, if you can make it, that'd be great.
Yeah, you know what? You just earned yourself another invite. I will be there, 10 a.m.
All right.
All this trash talk, I think I'm ready to take over a league here. Jamie Eisenberg, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jamie.
We'd love to have you on the show again, maybe, you know, before the date or maybe after, you know, a little bit after. We'd love to have you on again. Thank you so much for doing this.
It'd be great. My pleasure.
Jamie Eisenberg, CBSSports.com fantasy football analyst. Thanks again to him. His take on, you know, Matt Ryan and RG3 and sort of where they were going, I thought that was a little fascinating, just, you know, in terms of the fact that Matt Ryan's moving up in his rankings now. And I think a lot of fantasy footballers are going to be doing that going forward.
Yeah, that was great just to pick, you know, he's just a genius when it comes to fantasy football, it seems. And it goes back to you and I both drafted the same guys that he's just very high on at quarterback because they're falling. And he initially had them ranked behind guys like Colin Kaepernick. And I'm just sitting here and I can't – I'm just not thinking that either. And it was pretty cool to see him, you know, go, all right, this is the Matt Ryan. He's going to have Julio Jones. He needs to go back up to that top five position where he belongs. We've been high – we've been correct all along. Very high on Matt Ryan. More so maybe now than I was on RG3. He convinced me.
Yeah, that's a sell job and a half right there. He definitely knows his stuff. Again, go out August 23rd at Gillette Stadium, the CBS scene. It's a big sign. You can't miss it. They're going to have awesome stuff there, great fantasy advice. So if you're in the area, you could be New York, Philadelphia, drive down, make the drive. It's going to be well worth it. It's going to be a great event. Starts at 10 a.m. And again, Steve and I will tweet out the link so you can get more information on that. That is it for episode 11. A huge thank you to Jamie Eisenberg for coming on the show. A huge thank you to Jesse Wilkins for engineering the show. You can follow him on Twitter at Double Take Jesse. His little brother Seth made the, and by little I mean he's like 21 at this point. We're all getting older. It's a little depressing. You can follow him on SoundCloud at Seth Wilkins. He made the theme song to the show. 16, again, thank you for the official theme song to the show. And Steve, for episode 11.
Love it. That was my favorite episode so far. Each one just gets better and better. I absolutely love this. Thank you to Jamie. That was great. I'm looking forward to August 23rd.
Absolutely.
You can follow me at Uncle Stav. Check my stuff out at yummybro.com. That's all I got, Nick.
Yeah, and you will be meeting our new anchor sooner rather than later. We're going to tweet out, Instagram out more information on that.
Peace.
More awkwardness. I love it. Adios.